excited to let you know that we are now on Patreon. I hope from the bottom of my heart that you will consider joining the international community of plant friends supporting this podcast and content while getting some pretty cool perks, in my opinion, like bonus episodes, exclusive Growing Joy merch, shout outs on the podcast, and even one-on-one plant coaching with me. Imagine having the ability to literally just ask me about your plants and have me respond with personal feedback. That's now available to you if you join Patreon. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for considering this. Thank you for helping me help as many people possible grow joy. To learn more about the different tiers and different perks that you can get by joining Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/growingjoy. Once again, join our community, supporting this community at patreon.com/growingjoy. There are a lot of trendy words being thrown around right now about eco-friendly gardening, whether it's regenerative gardening, permaculture, chaos gardening, sustainable gardening. But plant friends, what do these words mean? How do they differ? And how can they help us grow happier, healthier plants and ecosystems and serve Mother Nature? Today's episode is a deep dive into all of this with a very knowledgeable expert, Stephanie Rose, founder of Garden Therapy and author of 12 books. Who is so committed to helping you garden for at least 5 minutes a day to receive the wellness benefits gardening can give us. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Growing Joy with Plants podcast, where we not only learn how to care for plants successfully, but how to simply and affordably use our plant babies to cultivate more joy in our lives by doing so. I'm Maria, former plant killer turned happy plant lady, author of Growing Joy, The Plant Lover's Guide to Cultivating Happiness, speaker, podcaster, and most importantly, your new best plant friend. On Growing Joy with Plants, you'll find conversations about houseplant care, gardening tutorials, and wellness through the lens of plants.
Plant care is self-care on Growing Joy.
Hello, plant friends. Welcome back to Growing Joy with Plants. Welcome home if you're a returning listener. If you're new, I'm Maria. I'm here to help you care for plants successfully and grow joy while doing so. And speaking of growing joy, I'm so excited about today's episode with my new plant friend, Stephanie Rose, who definitely feels like a planty soul sister of mine. She is all about wellness and gardening, and she has done extensive research on permaculture, regenerative gardening, all of this really cool eco-friendly gardening that we're going to talk about today, and speaks and is such an amazing educator. This conversation was so great. Before we dive into it, I just wanted to say, if you have been enjoying this content, please make sure that you give it a like and a review on whatever podcast player you're using. And take a minute and take your favorite episode that you've listened to in the last, you know, couple of months and send it to a plant friend or send it to a friend that you think might enjoy it. It's gardening season. This is a great time to get a lot of our friends who are not into plants into plants, because people feel more attracted to trying to garden, trying to grow things, trying to do houseplants. So if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to share an episode with a friend, it would mean so much to me. Now, without further ado, Stephanie and I have an amazing conversation. You will walk away from this episode with so many actionable insights for how to apply these permaculture and regenerative gardening practices into your garden immediately. So listen through to the end. All of these tips are so amazing. And Stephanie is so lovely. This was really such a wonderful conversation. So I hope you love it. My new plant friend, welcome to Growing Joy with Plants. I'm so excited that I get to have you on the podcast after meeting you in Seattle a couple months ago.
I know, me too. It's so good to see you again.
I love it when you meet people and you're just immediately like, oh yeah, I'm taking her. She's going to be one.
You're my people.
Exactly. I mean, I feel like we speak a very similar language in regards to our approach to plants, but you're predominantly outdoors and I'm predominantly indoors. So I'm so excited to lean on you for some gardening advice today.
Yeah. And I think the thing that impressed me the most was that it's this optimism and joy and gratitude that you come along, like in everything that you touch, you have gratitude for. And I feel the same way. And my 11-year-old son just said that to me the other day. He's like, Mom, you're always so optimistic. And I'm like, well, how can you not be when you get to do this as our work, right?
Yeah, 100%. Also, you know, having gotten to know you, we were on a panel at the Northwest Flower and Garden Show about wellness and plants, and I got to hear your story. And I'd love to know, I think a big part of why I am joyful and in gratitude is because I've been through some shit, you know? And I think when you've suffered some trauma and when you've gone through stuff, your perspective changes. And I know that your journey to growing and your personal journey and garden journey has been really interesting. Can you share how you got into gardening, how you built the garden therapy brand, and also regenerative gardening specifically?
Yeah. You know, it was, God, it feels like so long ago now that all of this started. But I was working in the corporate world. I didn't grow up a gardener. I, you know, lived in the city and just went about my days. Actually, you really inspired me when we talked a little bit about plant blindness. And I forgot to tell you this, but we wrote an article about it featuring your experiences. And I meant to send it to you. I haven't sent it to you. I just went up last week, but I meant to send it to you. Anyway, so yeah, I've been shouting your name ever since we met because I love that idea of plant blindness. I didn't actually recognize that I had this deficit disorder, this plant or nature deficit disorder, until, you know, we talked about it. But back in the day, I just had no real access to plants or understanding about them. And then when I became sick, I was always drawn to it sort of naturally, but didn't interact with them on a daily basis. Overnight, I got a headache. And after having this headache for a few days, I became extremely fatigued and I became so ill that I couldn't get out of bed. And that lasted for 2 years. So it was, yeah, overnight, my life changed. In about that first year, all I did was sleep. The second year, I got up and I would start to, I couldn't really go far. So I would just go out into my yard and sort of look at the shrubs and the grass that was growing and go, you know what, I'm gonna start gardening. So I got every book from the library and I started reading about how to garden and I started planting things. And that was way back in 2006. So in the years since then, I started with just 5 minutes a week of gardening and I moved up to becoming a master gardener, to developing children's gardens, to starting a charity garden in my front yard, to growing over 100 different kinds of herbs and perennials and vegetables in my small urban backyard, and then started studying permaculture. And that's when things like really, really took off. I started studying herbalism and permaculture because what I was learning about gardening in the outdoor realm seemed so labor intensive. Maybe that's the word. It required so much work and it seemed like a chore to me and everybody else that we would truck in all of this soil, plant these seeds, space it out, weed it, water it, do all this work constantly, all to get, you know, a little basket of tomatoes and some fresh herbs. And as joyful as that was, it was exhausting. So I thought, I think there's a better way of doing this. And I looked to the forest and meadows and the natural spaces around me. And I thought, you know, why are we reinventing the wheel here? So that's how I found permaculture. Permaculture is the practice of following the path of nature in order to grow our gardens with less human input and more input from Mother Nature. And now it comes by many names, regenerative gardening. I've been interviewed a whole bunch of times on chaos gardening because it's trending on TikTok, but it's, yes. But it's all the same thing, right? It's this idea of, and it's so funny because you think of it as chaos gardening because it's taking away that structure that we've been told we need to do in order to garden, create a raised bed, plant everything in a tidy row, only plant one variety. And it just seems like that level of restrictions and rules takes away from the beauty of how nature creates itself and recreates itself over time. So it sounds like chaos is anarchy, and it is. It's anarchy against the structure that's been causing gardening to sound like a chore rather than a beautiful experience and connection with plants.
It's so interesting because we're so disconnected from nature. We think, okay, I'm going to garden because that's going to connect me back to nature. And yes, it does. But gardening is still a lot of control. Like, it's still you exerting so much control over nature, which is such a fallacy because obviously nature, like Mother Nature, has been here longer than us. And, you know, she's going to be here longer than us. And then the more you get to know about gardening, the more curious you get about your compost, the more curious you get about harvesting your rainwater. And it's this really beautiful like journey or unfurling of this connection with the earth that I feel like is, for me, feels exponential. Like, I think, especially after, also, you didn't mention that you've also written 11 books, 12 books?
12, yeah.
Yeah, on gardening.
Yeah, gardening and herbalism.
Gardening and herbalism. So I've read two of your books and, you know, I was reading your regenerative garden book. Yeah, The Regenerative Garden. And I was like, dang, I could be doing one project a season from, you know, one project a summer from this book, like for the next two decades of my life. Like there's always going to be something to dive even deeper into your relationship with the earth. And I do feel like to an extent with houseplants, that is a little bit limited because we do have a different level of control with houseplants and you can't just let your houseplants run wild when you have paint and maybe you rent and stuff. So I do feel like that return to the wild with gardening is pretty amazing. Before we dive into some definitions I want to ask you about, you mentioned a charity garden in your front yard. What's that about?
Oh, well, that was actually, I wrote about that story in my Garden Alchemy book, which came out in 2020. And that was the introductory chapter. Was that I met a guy named Guy because I was on Craigslist looking for plants that I could buy. And he had a backyard nursery and he needed a place to store them because the place where he was living, he had to evacuate and he needed a place to store these plants because he grew perennials in order to help people who are living in our downtown East Side, which is where there's lots of folks living with addiction, gain dignity and purpose through gardening and landscaping work. And so we would hire folks so that they would get some skills, get outside in the sunshine, learn how to work with plants, and do these landscaping jobs. But part of how we funded it was to divide and sell perennials. They lost his place to sell them. So I said, I've got a sunny front yard and you've got plants that need a home. So I'll dig up my yard and you can put the plants in. So this is where my relationship with really learning from the plants started. And this is why I wrote it as the beginning of Garden Alchemy, because as you said, we're not in control of nature. We are part of nature and plants can be wonderful teachers for us. So Guy brought me 300 one-gallon pots with a green leaf sticking out of it and no labels or instructions and drove away. I was like, Guy, what am I supposed to do with this? So I had no idea about perennial gardening. I had no idea what any of these plants were. I put them all in based on how the leaves kind of looked. And then I had things like an 8-foot tall Joe Pye weed in the very front of the garden that had this stalk that I could not cut down and some invasive yellow loosestrife and all these other things that he had given me that I learned about. And it was amazing. It was so interesting to watch these plants grow, learn about their habits, learn about their habitat, move them around the garden and see how they thrived without it being a really pressured, you have to follow all these instructions. Instead, it's just like, yeah, what are the leaves telling you? Are they wilting? Do they need to be moved? And that's a lot of what you do with houseplants too, is you read the leaves and sort of listen to the plants, right?
Totally. And I think every year, so I'm a novice gardener. I'm learning to garden in the last couple of years when I moved out of the city into the country. And every year I pick something I've never gardened before and I do kind of chaotically figure it out. So like last year, you know, I just like threw a bunch of carrot seeds in a raised bed, but it was more in a grow bag and the carrots were atrocious, but I learned so much because I was like, oh, I got to watch the plant grow over a full season. And I overcrowded them, so they had no space. I did a bunch of stuff wrong, right? I planted them under tomatoes, and they were in too much shade because the tomatoes leafed out, and I didn't prune the tomato. I mean, but this year, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited to try carrots this year because I learned so much. And I don't know. I mean, I read the seed packet last year, and I still just kind of was like, whatever, I'm just going to figure this out, you know? And sometimes I feel like those are the best lessons you learn from having to just kind of trial and error it out.
Yeah, just like houseplants, there could be one little tweak that you make and it takes you from, you know, the best harvest you can have or the most robust plant or the most beautiful flowers or the strongest tree. You say you're a novice gardener, but you're not, because your interaction with houseplants and what you've been doing with your houseplants means you understand the life cycle. You respect those plants like they are beings. I've heard you talk about those plants, and I know that you respect and see them as living beings that have information that we can learn from. And that level of humility means you're never a novice gardener. You're already connected to nature, and taking that to the outside plants is, honestly, it's going to be way easier for you than taking it to the inside plants, because they're much more complicated to manage.
It's so fun too, because I was a beginner houseplant parent when I started this podcast, and now 8 years in, I know how to take care of houseplants, and it's so fun to be a student again. It's so fun to kind of be back at, you know, not square one, but to be like, wait, how do I plant potatoes? Potatoes are the new thing that I'm trying this year. And it was fun just like learning about it. But anyway, enough about me. Thank you for your compliments. Okay. So when it comes to regenerative gardening, I've heard the term regenerative. I've heard the term permaculture. I've heard chaos gardening a lot on my TikTok feed. Oh, I've also heard the term food forest. So is this all the same thing that just has multiple different names, or are there subtle differences between those four different titles? Whether you have acres to grow in or just a modest balcony like me, Gardener Supply Company has you covered with everything you need for successful indoor and outdoor growing. From containers to raised beds, seeds to plant supports, they have it all to create your dream garden oasis. They even sell edging and walkways so you can make your garden the most peaceful respite of your dreams. If you haven't heard of them already, Gardener Supply Company is a gardening company run by gardeners. For over 40 years, they have been selling garden essentials and sharing helpful advice to make growing easier, more comfortable, and more fun for everyone. You might have seen their gorgeous raised cedar garden beds on my Instagram when I did that garden install for my sister for her baby shower. They are so beautiful, and she has sent me pictures since, and the plants have just taken off in these raised beds. They are so happy. Or maybe you've seen their gorgeous trellises and arches all over Instagram. They really have incredible products. You have to go on the website and check them out. They've also been earth friendly from the beginning. Gardener Supply Company was one of the early providers of organic gardening supplies and humane pest control solutions, and they have always strived for a positive environmental impact through the products they sell, the advice that they give, and the causes they champion. But don't just take it from me. Go click around Gardener Supply Company's website like you would any other, like Amazon or any other shopping site. I click around on gardeners like I click around on Anthropology, like when I'm clothing shopping. So discover your garden favorites and exclusive innovations at gardeners.com/growingjoy. So that's gardeners.com/growingjoy, and use code growingjoy for free shipping. So the code growingjoy will unlock free shipping at gardeners.com/growingjoy. Let's grow together, gardeners.com/growingjoy. On an episode all about regenerative gardening, we've got to talk about Espoma Organic and all of the high quality, organic, and eco-friendly products that they have to support you in your garden. It's probably time to start fertilizing your plants at this point in the summer. You got to make sure that they have the nutrition that they need, particularly if you're growing in containers, but even definitely if you're growing in ground as well, because you want those plants to unfurl and have juicy tomatoes or beautiful blooms this gardening season. So whether it's blooms you want, whether it's food you want, whether it's aromatic herbs you want, Espoma Organic is the 90-year-old family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet, and they've got what you need. My entire garden is planted in Espoma's line of stuff, and I will be fertilizing my garden with their line of tones. So their line of fertilizers are called their tones, and they have a tone or a fertilizer specifically curated for so many different things that you grow. So I'll use Garden Tone on all of my garden containers, and then I will also use their Tomato Tone on my tomato plants, which is specifically for tomatoes. If you're growing roses, they have a rose tone. If you're growing bulbs, they have a bulb tone. They have a tone for everything there. If you go on the tone section of their website, you'll just scroll and scroll and scroll. And not only do they have amazing composts and tones and potting mixes for indoor and outdoor plants, they have eco-friendly packaging and 100% solar-powered plant and zero waste manufacturing. To learn more, go to espoma.com and see where your local dealers are, or you can go to my show notes to go to my Amazon storefront where I have a curated list of my Espoma favorites.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. Food forest is a part of a regenerative garden. So it's just a type of gardening. It doesn't mean that a food forest would be a regenerative garden, but a regenerative garden isn't necessarily a food forest. Maybe it's the other way around. But the idea is that there's so many different kinds of regenerative gardens and they're not necessarily just food producing.
Okay.
Permaculture comes from the idea of permanent agriculture or following the sort of systems in Mother Nature. And you know, like one of the great examples that we have of it is then in where I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, and on the island here up north, there is a food forest that was created by the Indigenous people who live there. And it is 150 years old, long since abandoned, but still producing food. And they know it's a food forest because it has varieties of plants that have been planted together that all work with each other and support each other in this mini ecosystem to produce food. So, you know, cherries will fall off the trees and fertilize the soil, and that fertilization helps to, you know, grow plants that are lower down or berry bushes or mushroom plants that, you know, then create more food. So it's a really interesting how it becomes this ecosystem that you can walk away from, in this case, for many, many years. But the idea is that if you walk away from a food forest or a regenerative garden for 10 years, it should still be growing on its own. You're setting it up so that you walk away and let Mother Nature now take the lead. And so I took this concept, which often is applied to regenerative farming or permaculture farms, where people are growing food for the masses or running sort of more industrial type, not industrial because it's obviously on a smaller scale, but larger food sort of production systems, and took it to the home gardener. So The Regenerative Garden is a book about projects where you can take these permaculture projects, make them digestible so that you can apply them to, like me, a small urban space, like you, a balcony, or even like a suburban home or a small homestead, something like that. All these concepts work together.
Yeah, like I was reading, you have a bee bath and a bird bath. You have multiple birds. I'm a crazy bird person. I mean, I have a bird and I live for my hummingbirds. And it was interesting in your book about regenerative gardening that some of the practices in your book actually aren't planting plants. It's making sure that you have a bee bath or making sure that you have a bird bath or that you have bird feeders or that you're growing plants that birds can eat. Like, it is this very holistic approach to gardening and not just, okay, I have 12 square feet of a raised bed. What can I get out of this? It's more like, what can I put into this to support more than just the plants that I'm growing, but the pollinators? And, you know, it's really interesting. And then where does chaos gardening fall into that? And why do you think chaos gardening is trendy right now?
Well, chaos gardening is this thing, like I said, I keep getting calls about it because everybody wants to have an interview or an idea of what this is, like all the big magazines, right? They all want to show up addressing this because there's 18 million searches on TikTok over chaos gardening. And I believe, so this is what I've explained to them, is I sort of explain how permaculture or regenerative gardening works, you know, how we can apply these principles. And a lot of these are old school gardeners who are like, okay, but don't we want to have, you know, to follow the seed packets, make sure we have proper germination. We want to have, you know, smaller plants at the front. We have a succession of blooms. And I think the chaos gardening system came into play because these, you know, TikTokers were just the newer generation of gardeners that is coming up doesn't want to follow all the rules. They don't want to have a manicured lawn with, you know, sets of three matching perennials and, you know, and all this like colored bark mulch and this stuff, right? That just does not work for this reconnection with nature that people are having. Instead, they'll take a packet of seeds and they'll spread them broadly on the soil and see what grows. And I've been doing that forever because that's, I agree. I'm 100% with this idea of chaos. And you know, it comes from the, so I've learned this from my 11-year-old son. It comes from the D&D world, right? So from Dungeons, it comes from the Dungeons and Dragons concept. If you've seen memes going around the internet, they have a grid where it shows you what loyal, good, neutral, and evil are, and then chaotic, good, neutral, and evil are. And this is, I mean, it might be getting a little bit deep, but where the chaos gardening comes from is the idea that our old school gardeners saw our manicured lawns and our sets of three perennial landscaping as lawful good, but the new generation sees it as lawful evil. And that generation saw, our previous generation of gardeners saw the way we were just creating these wild spaces that had, you know, pruned shrubs and trees that were super tall and many plants all close together growing in sort of like a wild space as chaotic evil, but the new generation sees it as chaotic good. And so I really feel that we're seeing this trend towards it as a complete rebellion to the almost antithesis of nature that some of our landscapes have become in the home garden.
I also think it really takes the pressure off of you. Like the idea of I'm going to throw these seeds out and whatever germinates, germinates, and, you know, survival of the fittest, instead of I have to make a perfectly manicured lawn with the perfect mulch and, or I have to grow the perfect tomato plant. I have to do this perfectly, which I think is the old version of gardening. So yeah, I'm fascinated by it. But back to, you know, this concept of regenerative. So are regenerative and permaculture the same?
It's nothing's the same. The idea of a regenerative garden is a garden that will regenerate itself. So there's sustainability, which is you're putting back into it what you're taking out, right? So there's still a lot of human input to return what has been removed. There's resiliency, where your garden can withstand what's getting thrown at it from an environmental standpoint, from harvesting, etc. And a regenerative garden is one that you can walk away from for 10 years and come back and it will still be thriving because it has the sustainability and the resiliency built right in.
And permaculture, where does permaculture fit in there too?
Permaculture is more a study of all the different ways and systems that you can create a sustainable landscape. So whether it is a farm or a home garden or something to that effect, it's the principles of it. And you see the permaculture books, they're like 1,000 pages of text and copy and heavy and full of information. It's taking those ideas and concepts. So when you were saying with the regenerative garden, my book, that it's got lots of projects in there, I've broken it into 6 chapters, which are some key concepts from permaculture and sort of evolved it into regenerative gardening. So I chose the chapters so that it wasn't just plants. That's just one of the chapters. That's the third one. But we start with the soil. Then we talk about water catchment and use. We talk about plants. Then we talk about water catchment, storage, and use. So water is so important. So think about how we gather water and how we use it and how we can continue to return it back to the land. And so there's a ton of projects that sort of talk about these theories of, like you said, composting, all the different ways of planting, but I package them into these areas so that you can pick out one project or you can sort of get the overall concept.
Yeah, because I'm not reading that 1,000-page regenerative
book. No.
It's very intimidating. It really does. It feels... Also, because it's permanent and it's not dealing in annuals, it's dealing in perennials and it's dealing in like setting it up once to kind of have it reap rewards. It sometimes can be a little scary. Is this also where the concept of no-till comes from?
No-till is part of it. I mean, none of this can be attached in sort of like a textbook. There are people who are permaculturists who till. There are people who, like, in a regenerative garden, it doesn't mean you're never going to do plant a seed ever again. The idea of creating these landscapes in our yard is so that we can harness the available resources and use them most efficiently. So a no-till garden is one where you're not disrupting the soil and the mycelium and the network, the fungal network that lives underneath the soil, and allowing you to build the soil similar to like a forest does, where the leaves drop and then create a mulch, and that mulch breaks down and it feeds the soil below, and the rainwater helps to bring those nutrients down. And it's just gets consistent cycle of building rather than, you know, what we were doing, which was tearing up the soil to make it loose and fluffy, which incidentally is a great way for you to grow your carrots. Because they want a nice, light, fluffy soil or sandy soil with good drainage so that they can have a great shape. If they hit even a lump in that soil, they're going to fork or turn in a strange direction or get really stubby. So there are exceptions to everything. I mean, it's really about thinking it through. So I have these first three chapters, right, which talk through sort of your practical things, your soil, your water, and your plants. The next three chapters start to talk about things that we think about in permaculture. One is climate. So we're talking about how do we harness the elements of climate in order to make our gardens more productive and more suitable for the people who enjoy them. So creating things that hold heat, protect us against wind.
Or the rain gardens too. I mean, yes. We're seeing so much flooding, like even just in the week of our interview, you know, Creekside Nursery was underwater. Like there's so much flooding. And now I've just learned about this concept of a rain garden, which is fascinating. Let's go back to soil, because another hot word that you hear, well, there's two hot words I'd like to ask you about. One, let's start with hugel culture. I learned about hugel culture. I was visiting a regenerative farm at the spa that I like to go to, and they have a hugel culture bed. But to me, that feels like that's a long game. Like, can you explain what it is and why people are playing with it and why it's getting more popular these days? I just got home from 10 days of traveling, and my freshly installed garden is thriving, plant friends. No wilted plants. My tender seedlings that I planted before I left 10 days ago have doubled, if not tripled, in size. And no, I did not hire a plant sitter. No, I did not install fancy irrigation on a timer that's connected to my hose. I just used the Crescent Garden self-watering planters. They babysat my plants while I was away, and my plants are so happy. I am so excited about this. So if you don't know, the Crescent Garden True Drop self-watering planters have completely taken my stress away. They've been a part of this massive balcony garden glow up that I've done. I hope you've checked it out on social media. Last summer, I grew in grow bags, and I would leave for a long weekend, maybe 3 days, and I would have so much stress about my tomatoes and basil. I would have to ask a neighbor to come water the plants because, you know, those types of plants can be summer divas, and you don't want to come home to wilted plants or dead plants, right? This time, I left for 10 days, and I didn't break a sweat because I knew that these self-watering Crescent Garden True Drop planters were going to water my plants passively while I was gone. Plus, the planters are so chic. They are such a major aesthetic upgrade from my grow bags. If you haven't seen them, check out my social media on Instagram or YouTube or TikTok for visuals. I have both the rim planters, which look like a classic terracotta pot, but they come in many colors. And then I also have the Nest elevated planter bed, which is my favorite thing in the world. It's bursting with herbs and micro dwarf tomatoes right now. We already have tomatoes setting fruit. And all these planters are outfitted with the True Drop self-watering technology. Crescent Garden planters come in a variety of shapes, sizes, and price points, and they are all made from 100% recyclable materials with a 10-year limited warranty. And plant friends, it gets better because Crescent Garden is offering you 15% off your own self-watering planters. Take your stress away with your garden and your edibles and flowers this summer. As a Growing Joy listener, you get 15% off. All you got to do is use the code GROWJOY15 at growingjoywithmaria.com/crescentgarden. So that's growingjoywithmaria.com/crescentgarden and use code GROWJOY15 at checkout for 15% off, and act fast because the offer ends soon. Thank you, Crescent Garden, for allowing me to enjoy my social life this summer and enjoy an amazing abundance of fruits, vegetables, and herbs on my balcony. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Plant friends, if you've listened to the show, you know that I have struggled with depression and anxiety my entire adult life. Therapy has been a game changer for me. I don't know what life would look without it. It's made me a better person, a better partner, a better wife, sister, friend, and podcaster. I'm able to show up here better. If you're considering therapy and you want an easy solution, consider BetterHelp. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you
can switch therapists anytime you want at no extra cost. I think this is so amazing because when I restarted therapy a couple of years ago, I tried 3 different therapists before I found the right one. It's all about finding that right match, and I love that BetterHelp offers this flexibility. Tend to your mental health like you tend to your physical health, like you tend to your plants' health. Don't skip it. Don't skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/plants and get 10% off your first month. If you're interested, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/plants for 10% off. BetterHelp.com/plants.
Yeah, absolutely. So hookah culture is kind of like an easy way to create a bed if you've got a large space and you've got some rotting wood. Say you have some soil that is subpar for planting, and you have a managed forest or a woodland or something near you or some trees that you've got to take down, and you've got a bunch of wood, then what you would do is dig a trench in the soil, put a bunch of those large pieces of wood, so large logs, chop them up, branches, hard things like pits from fruits and nuts and nutshells and things like that in there that take a long time to compost and break down. And then top that with layers of your composting or your sheet mulching type layers, which you would have carbon materials, things like really dry leaves, paper, cardboard, you know, those sorts of carbon materials or nitrogen materials. Leaves can be more neutral depending on how dry they are. So you could have, you know, some green leaves in there, some garden waste, some kitchen waste, layering those things so that you create a mound. So you start with this hole that has the branches, and now you're layering the other things to create a mound, and then a layer of compost on top that you can plant right into. And so now you can do 2 things. If your soil is terrible, say it's, you know, it's got some heavy metals in it, or it's not, nothing's growing there, you could plant things that native plants for your area that remediate the soil. So, you know, things like mullein or sage or you know, wonderful plants that sort of pull out the toxins and clean the soil for you and add nutrition into it. Or you can, you know, plant your squash plants and your tomatoes right into that hookah culture because it's going to hold moisture better than like a bed without wood. The wood that you feel in the forest, if you've had a chance to go out to the forest when it's, you know, sort of after the rain, there's these pieces of wood that's decomposing. If you pick them up, they feel like sponges. They just hold on to water. So having all that wood with all of its fungal matter and bacterial matter and water holding properties means it, as it's breaking down and composting, it's feeding the plants underneath and making this beautiful soil.
It's almost like bottom watering or like a self-watering container almost.
Nature's self-watering container. Exactly. Yeah.
And then is the thought that over years and years and years, the wood is going to decompose into more rich soil?
Yeah. And it's going to flatten out and be soil level, right? So the mound isn't going to be there anymore. But it's a long, you said, long game composting method.
And then what about lasagna gardening? I have had a couple of friends who are like, I did lasagna gardening this year. And I was like, good for you. It seems interesting. Do you have any lasagna gardens? Are you a proponent of lasagna gardening?
Well, a hookah culture is a lasagna garden. Sheet mulching is lasagna gardening. It's a wonderful term that, you know, it was used to create a book on lasagna gardening that helps people sort of get excited about the ideas of building up layers of soil. So if you're going to take, you know, say you're not going to do a hookah culture, but instead you're going to create a lasagna garden, you could sheet mulch an area of lawn to make a garden very quickly.
And what is sheet mulching for us newbies that might not know?
It's lasagna gardening, sheet mulching. It's all the same thing. So over your grass, put a layer of like really thick layers of newspaper or cardboard and wet that down. And on top of that, put a little bit of soil and then start layering your compost ingredients. Carbon, which I explained a second ago, which is like papers and some dried leaves and like anything that's sort of a really dry carbon-based material. So shredded paper and leaves and straw and things like that. And then your green materials. So you'll layer them and continue to do this until you put your compost layer at the top. And if you have about 2 inches of compost at the top, you can plant right into it as the other layers sort of break down and create your garden bed for you.
Okay. I love that. because is when we're talking about soil in the regenerative garden, like if I'm a gardener who has a new plot of land or is trying to bring the regenerative mindset to my existing garden, what am I thinking about when it comes to the soil? What's the difference, I guess, between a regenerative approach to soil and a basic gardener's approach to soil?
I think that the regenerative approach is the same in everything, whether it's soil or plants or water. It's start with what you have. Try to think about how you can reuse everything or recycle, find materials around you. I always say start where you are, use what you have, and proceed with kindness. So in terms of soil, you'd be like, okay, what soil do I have here already on my property? Do I need to bring some more in, or can I start to build it? Do I have a bunch of leaves available that I can start to compost? Do I have compost available? Can I create a sheet mulch garden? Can I make a hugel culture? How can I start to build the soil here? And then instead of taking all that material every year and putting it into the green waste and sending it off and then having that composted at your city facilities, if you're lucky, like we have city facilities that compost it, and then sell it back to us, you're doing it on your own property. You're finding ways to build your soil over time. It's not just start it today, you're going to have a garden and your garden will be ready in a month. Think of it as a mindset as how do I learn how to build my own soil so that my soil is hyper-local? You know that like 0 mile diet that was super popular for a while where everybody was like, I'm going to eat everything that I can grow and I don't have to travel. Think about how hyper-local soil, the soil that you're creating from your own compost, will have the most success for growing the plants in your area because
yeah, that's a great point.
It came from your land and it's already proven to be successful.
I love that. Especially just, it's also in reverence to the land, like to be putting the land back into itself instead of from outside. What about water? So I'm like, okay, you have to be I'm a renter. I'm like, okay, so for regenerative gardening, you got to be an owner for soil because you have to be able to till or not till to, this is a long game. Soil is a long game. What about water? Water sounds like a long game too, because you're doing rain. What are different ways you can capture rainwater? I guess, is that probably the biggest way to use the water that hits your land?
Yeah, I think, again, it's just how we think about it. So use what you have, start where you are, and proceed with kindness. I mean, if we think about every drop of water that we have is precious. It's been around forever and it's finite. Every drop of water, we need to take care of it and send it back to the land. When rain falls, if we can keep it where it falls instead of redirecting it into storm drains and sending it away to get processed or go into the ocean, then we're helping reduce the drought and collect water where it's needed. And that's part of what a rain garden is that you talked about a little bit earlier. It's about allowing the rain to fall and drain where it is. In places where there's a lot of rain at some times of year and then maybe less rain the other times of year. But to answer your question, capturing water is a shorter game and it's one that you need many methods because it's really hard to capture all the water that you need. So if you think about it as when you boil your vegetables or, you know, make tea and you've got that little bit of water left over, use that to water your plants. If you're taking a shower, I don't do this indoors, but I have an outdoor shower that I just built. You can have that shower in a bucket and then use that to water the plants. If you've got rain barrels, then you can use that to store water and water your plants. You can have drought tolerant plants. You can have hoyas planted in your garden, which are clay pots that go under the soil and slowly seep water into the plants at the root system where they need it. Combine all of those methods together and you'll start to capture, you know, the water as you need it. It sounds overwhelming, but if you just start with one and then start adding another one, like you said, year after year, the more you add these systems, the more you're going to have to use less supplemental water.
Yeah. And maybe like this year, you know, I'm still renting. Maybe I make the Oya that's a project in your book. It's basically two terracotta pots. You seal at the lip of the pot and fill it with water. Maybe that's something I do this year in my containers, knowing that like a rainwater barrel doesn't make sense for me with this specific house. But also even I'm just thinking like I have a pond. So maybe I go and grab water from my pond to water with my plants instead of right out of my faucet. Like that could be a very simple shift that I do.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I had a really cool system for a little while, which I loved, where I had a rain barrel attached to a drip system that was automatic and solar powered. So when it was sunnier, it would release more water from the rain barrel into the plants. And when it was less sunny, less water would be released. So it was a really hands-free system, which I just...
Clever. I love it when it's smart, too. I love it when it requires less work on my end.
I know.
Speaking of less work on my end, I love that you are a proponent of intense planting because no one wants to weed. And intensive planting has so many wonderful benefits. But can you talk a little bit about why, you know, maybe we can kind of ignore some of the spacing guidelines on our seed packets, which I do anyway, because I don't know. I'm like, it's not enough. I need more. I need more. But where did this intensive planting practice come from? And why is it still used? And why are people gravitating to it now more?
Well, I think that as we adopted farming practices into our edible food gardens and our landscape gardens, people were spacing out plants so that they were able to have the space of a full height plant. But again, that is not how things grow in nature. So beets, seeds have a number of different beets all grow, like it's all combined into one seed. It's not just one beet that will grow from that seed. There's multiple ones in one sort of like gnarly little ball of seeds. And so they're meant to grow in little bunches. So the fact that we plant them and then we start thinning them out and space them all 6 inches so that each beet can be perfectly round, it doesn't give us, and again, I'm talking food systems, but I do this a lot more in all of my other ornamental gardens, because cut flower gardens, you want things spaced really close together. So when you're cutting them, you don't have a bunch of holes. Perennial gardens, you want to plant things close together so that you're not weeding and you don't need a whole bunch of extra mulch. In any sort of garden where you have trees, we're building guilds. And that's what a food forest is. But a guild is one, a way of talking about the structure of it without it necessarily being about food plants or edible plants. It's a number of plants that work together. So the overstory plants, the understory plants, the trees and the shrubs, the low growing plants, the perennials and the annuals that seed themselves, and even fungal plants like mushrooms, all growing together and supporting each other means that you don't have a lot of weeding to do because the plants are sort of working within this ecosystem that takes up all that space.
You just reminded me that I wanted to grow mushrooms this year on my balcony and I forgot until right now. So thank you for reminding me. I got to go order my substrate. I want to grow lion's mane. So it sounds a lot like companion planting, like the roots, fruits, shoots, that whole companion planting, tomato, basil, carrots all together, very similar, right?
Yeah.
Or the three sisters garden, if you want to talk about indigenous practices.
Exactly. Three Sisters is a guild. So it's where you have your corn plants that the bean plants grow up and the roots are shaded by the squash plants below. And the beans fix the nitrogen in the soil, which squash are heavy feeders and so are corn. So they all work together in order to create sort of a symbiotic relationship and more food in that one space. It is sort of like, would you say, companion planting? It's also succession planting. It's also polyculture. It's all of those things, all of those concepts that have one name and do one thing, but it's all of them. So succession planting means things that sort of grow and come into fruit or flower at different times of the season or of a year or of many years. And it's that concept as well. And polyculture is growing in a bunch of different kinds of plants instead of just one row of one kind of plant, so that if one isn't thriving, the others will have a chance to thrive in that spot. You said it at one point, survival of the fittest. Throw out your seeds and see what sticks. And so if you only plant one kind of carrot and it gets carrot rust fly, and then your whole crop is ruined. But if you plant 12 different kinds of carrots, you might plant one called flyaway that carrot rust fly doesn't like, or some other ones that are ready to be harvested before the carrot rust fly can actually make do damage to them. So then you'll learn which ones work well in your garden.
I love that. I just had this flash of insight where I'm like, oh, this is going to be a really cute TikTok idea or a real idea. But it sounds like these guilds, these like groups of plants that thrive together, they're all very different. It's kind of like a group of friends, like a Sex and the City group. You know, the group of friends from Sex and the City are like a group of girlfriends, how all the girlfriends are different, but within a group, it makes sense. It's kind of like that.
Totally. Yeah. And then each one of them has their own special personality. Yeah. Like, oh, you're such a Samantha. Oh, you're such an overstory plant.
Yeah. Like in the Three Sisters garden, I feel like Carrie's the sunflower. I don't know. What would the flower be? I don't know. Now I'm getting too deep into it. Sorry.
I think we need to workshop this one, though. I love where you're going with it. It sounds hilarious. We need to
workshop it. But then I'm like, who's the pea of the four of them? Is it Charlotte? Is Charlotte the pea that climbs up the stalk? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I think the corn would be, gosh, it's a tough one. It's a tough
Miranda?
One. I was going to say Miranda, but I think Samantha, like standing tall and proud and the like sort of workhorse of producing all this squash and being really practical would be.
I think that's Miranda.
That would be Miranda. Yeah.
And where's Carrie? I don't know. Carrie's a little bit.
Carrie's the sunflower. You added a sunflower into it and I'm all for it. I'm all for
it. There we go. Yeah. There it is. All right. Great. Workshopped. Anyway, back to our conversation on regenerative gardening.
I love it.
Oopsies. So I also thought that it was interesting that regenerative gardens tend to have less pests, right? Why is that?
Well, for all the reasons that we talked about already, working within your environment and creating a lot of variety, it helps to control the pests. There's two main reasons. One is because if you don't have a lot of one thing that the pests like, so let's go back to this carrot rust fly and carrots again. If we have one variety of carrots and it's just this swath of these carrots and these carrot rust flies are like, hey, where should we build our nest and start laying all of our eggs so that our young larva has something to munch on that's delicious? And they see this row of perfect carrots, that's what they're going to go for. If you grow your carrots in between a bunch of other plants throughout your garden and then just pull them here or there, those carrot rust flies are going to go to your neighbor's house that has that row of carrots that looks like the perfect place to go. You might get a few, but you're not going to get like this huge, massive overgrowth of them. And the other thing is that we're creating gardens that bring in predatory insects and animals. We're creating a welcoming space that allows different creatures to exist. And those creatures, like we talked a little bit about bird gardening and how much you love birds. Birds love to eat bugs. And so the more birds that we can invite into our garden, the more we're going to sit back sipping iced tea or cocktail and enjoying the garden while the birds are doing all the hard work of going in between every plant and eating the pests out of it.
You know who I'm obsessed with? I don't want to say deadly, but I am extremely allergic to mosquitoes to the point that I've been hospitalized twice for mosquito bites. So I have a pretty healthy fear of mosquitoes. I used to have a healthy fear of bats until I moved to the country. And I like wouldn't go on my patio the first year I lived in the country in the evening because I was so scared of the bats because we have so many bats just flying in the air. And then I learned that bats can eat like 1,000 mosquitoes in an hour, like something crazy. And bats, people will actually put bat houses on their property if they have a mosquito problem. Like bats are the greatest mosquito like remediation ever. And now I'm like so obsessed with the bats. I just sit on my balcony and I just like say thank you to them as they're just zipping around at dusk. Bats are not birds. They're the squirrels of the sky. But yeah, I'm also very into bats these days.
Bats are fantastic. They're just
shout out.
Lovely. Yeah. Big shout out to bats. And I'll throw this one out there too. Spiders. Some people don't like spiders, but spiders eat a lot of mosquitoes. So thank you, spiders. Every time you see a spider, thank them for all the great work they do.
Shout out to spiders. They're also the symbol of the divine feminine. I mean, come on.
Gotta love
we love a spider. Also, spiders don't bite you as much as mosquitoes do. I mean, a spider is very rarely going to bite you.
Yeah, no, mosquitoes are the worst.
Yeah, mosquitoes are going to bite you 10 out of 10 of the times, or they're going to bite me 10 out of 10 of the times. Okay. So you have just moved in. Congratulations on purchasing your new house.
Thank you.
It's like you have a new canvas. Like, what are the regenerative projects that, what's your plan for your property? Like, what are the regenerative projects you're going to be setting up?
Oh gosh, I have a tiny little urban lot and I got a 100-year-old house and I moved in less than a year ago. And I'm really glad that I didn't do all the projects right away because it's taken me just spending the time with the land for a year and seeing the differences in how it changes and what's here naturally has been really eye-opening. Basically, it was a lawn in the front and the back, not much else going on. And the front yard, we talked about chaos gardening and throwing a pack of seeds. I have been sharing the whole process of this on all of my social media accounts so that you can see it along the way rather than just seeing all the beautiful flowers when it's done. But last fall, I planted 1,500 bulbs in my front yard, which is only 600 square feet. So it was tiny. And they've just finished blooming. Like if I look outside now, there's just a few of the tulips that are left, but everything else is done. And then on top of that, I did not rip up the lawn that was there. It was full of moss, some grass, some buttercup. I didn't rip it up. Instead, I leveled it by spreading soil, turf soil on it, which is a mix of compost and sand. So it's got good drainage. And then on top of that, I took a lawn alternative wildflower blend, which is a very low growing lawn full of some deep rooted fescues, which are like grass plants. And then just a bunch of flowers that grow to about 6 inches tall. And I planted that in February, which, again, the chaos component meant that on my Instagram feed, people were like, whoa, you're crazy. You cannot plant grass seeds and wildflower seeds in February. And I'm like,
watch me.
Hold on, people. We're doing it. Like, just hold on to your hats. This is happening. And it is insane. I have people stopping on the sidewalk constantly just to look at the lawn because it is just covered in these gorgeous blue flowers right now. It is fluffy. It is pretty. It's about 6 inches tall. And I'm going to leave it to the end of May. Then I'm going to mow it down and I'm just going to continue to build the strength in the root system. So that's just one project. In the back, I'm going to put in a food forest. That's in the process. I did a kind of crazy thing, which is totally not a permaculture thing, but it is. I put in a hot tub because we didn't talk about this, but you know, out of my being sick all those years ago, I am left with a permanent disability. So I consider myself or call myself working disabled. It takes me three times as much time. It's harder for me to do stuff, but I live a life of somebody with an invisible disability. And so one of the things I need to do is soak in hot water.
Hell
so
yeah.
I put a hot tub in, but I didn't just go and get like the Costco hot tub and throw that into my yard. I found somebody who was rehoming because they were a renter, a hot tub plus a whole gazebo. And I took that whole thing, disassembled it from their place, rebuilt it at mine, and put in an outdoor shower with a French drain that's capturing water, returning it to the garden. So it
oh
is.
Oh my God.
Yes, it's amazing. So yeah, like all of this stuff is just sort of I don't know where it's going to go. I just, you know, I found the thing on Facebook Marketplace, the hot tub on Facebook Marketplace, and I had 4 days to figure out how to get a very heavy hot tub into my yard and moved in and create a base for it. And I'm like, I'm motivated. So I'm going to do this.
That's incredible. I knew we would be friends. Yeah. I'm obsessed with baths and hot tubs. I beg my husband every year to get one, but we have like a 9-foot swimming pond. There's no need. But you know how many times I've Googled, can you put Epsom salt in a hot tub? I'm like, you cannot. P.S. Don't do that. But I love Epsom salt baths. And my parents, when I visit them, they have a hot tub. And I every morning get up and have my coffee in the hot tub and read in the hot tub, like as my morning practice when I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of you.
Well, so the thing is, it's not only, so what you just said is that I was having baths all the time too. So all of that water was going down the drain every time I was having a bath. So I fill this up and I found a way to minimize the chemicals that I'm using as well. So there are some, but they aren't as bad as you think. You think hot tub chemicals because of the public pools that you've been in and it smells really strong and it's drying to your skin. When you have your own, it's not so bad. So I'm in the discovery process. I'm writing about this, but I love also the outdoor shower. It's got a propane heater on it. And so you can go outside and you can have a hot shower before you get into the hot tub, or you can have an ice cold shower to like stimulate your body.
Yeah.
And I wash the dog in it. So stinky dog doesn't go around the house all wet.
Sounds like you're building a paradise. Our dream is to do a cold plunge sauna combo. That's my dream. Ooh, for my backyard.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That cold and hot is so stimulating. It feels so good, especially if you've got chronic pain, but just like even to give you energy or help clear your mind. So yeah, I'm loving this project. One of the chapters that I have in here is all about community. And so it's not just like a water thing. I created this hot tub and I'm one of the few people who have something like this in my neighborhood. And so my friends come over and we have like, I swear, I had a business friend come over and we did a little bit of a working thing. I tell everybody just bring their bathing suit. And we spent half of our business meeting in the hot tub.
I mean, does it get better than that? I don't think so. That's why you should do business in the hot tub. People do it on the golf course. Why can't you do it in the hot tub? Makes sense.
Exactly. Work from home has taken a whole new meaning.
I'm obsessed with that. Well, I can't wait to follow your journey, and you're, you know, a few steps ahead of me, and we don't own our house yet. So I'm like going to be furiously taking notes. I think you credited Robin Wall Kimmerer in your book. You've read Braiding Sweetgrass?
Yes, of course. Yes.
So I live basically on the land that she writes about. I live like 20 minutes from where she grew up. And my lawn is, and I'm in the woods. I mean, I'm in the sticks. And my lawn is all clover, viola, and wild strawberries. You know, she writes about the wild strawberries in her book. So we have like wild strawberries taking over our door frame at this moment. I'm like, I think we need to pull these out. They're going to start hurting the house. But yeah, I love the idea of no more lawns. I don't think I could ever have a lawn now that I've experienced this quote unquote lawn that we have. But it's just like a million different native plants. It's incredible.
Oh, it sounds like heaven. Oh, it just sounds beautiful. I want to see a picture of that. So
I will. I'll text it to you. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just totally obsessed with beautiful, no turf lawns or low turf lawns.
Totally. Well, where can everyone follow? Number one, get your wonderful books. And number two, follow along this journey because you're recording your process. Where can everyone find you?
I'm Garden Therapy. So my website is called Garden Therapy and I'm Garden Therapy on all social media. So you can find me if you go to Garden Therapy, search for Garden Therapy or Stephanie Rose or anything sort of to that effect, Stephanie Rose Gardening, you'll find Garden Therapy. And I have the links to my YouTube channel, to TikTok, to Instagram, to Facebook, to Pinterest. Still got lots of stuff going on in Pinterest.
A post you did that I was like, oh my God, I didn't even think about that. You did a funny post this week where you were like, to anybody who needs to hear this, if you want to treat your dahlias like annuals and just leave them in the ground and not pull them up and divide them, like you can do that. I didn't even think that was available to me. Like just treat my dahlia tubers like annuals. You buy them. They're not expensive. If you buy a bag of tubers, like, and I don't grow dahlias because I'm like, too high maintenance. I did it once. I don't want to do it again. And now I'm like, wait, I could just treat them like annuals. Thank you for that, Stephanie.
Oh, you're welcome. You know, that actually came out of our panel that you and I did when Kim asked us, how do we deal with garden guilt? And my answer was, well, guilt, I mean, those plants should have tried harder. Like that was the whole, I have only limited energy for what I can handle. So I'll plant those dahlias in the ground and take the beautiful cut flowers for the year. And if they come back next year, it's a bonus. Otherwise, you know, I'm happy to buy them again next year because.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the memories. I love it.
Thanks for the memories. Well,
go follow Stephanie, go buy her books, particularly The Regenerative Garden, I love. And then you've mentioned Garden Alchemy a little bit. You want to just talk about Garden Alchemy for a quick minute?
Yeah, Garden Alchemy is a recipe book for your garden. So it takes that concept of herbalism. And instead of using plants as medicine for humans, it's using plants as medicine for your garden. So there's a bunch of recipes, concoctions, elixirs, soil mixes, how to make composty. The bee bath is in there. So we'll find lots of different ideas on how to naturally take care of your garden using the power of medicinal plants.
So great. Well, maybe we'll have you back on for a medicinal episode in the future, because that's where I've started dabbling, started putting my toe in the water, but that's a whole nother thing. But maybe we'll have you back soon.
I would love that.
Thank you so much, Stephanie Rose. She is so lovely. You should definitely go follow her. Check out her millions of books that she's written. All of her blogs that she's written. GardenTherapy.ca is her website. Find her, Garden Therapy, on Instagram. I'm loving her content. I'm loving following her journey with her new house. But she really is. She's such a kindred spirit. I love her so much. So we'll make sure that all of the links to all of her books and her websites and her Instagrams are in the show notes. If you want to go follow her, thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining me and sharing all of this amazing insight. I'm so inspired. I can't wait to see what I can apply to my garden this year, and more importantly, to my gardens in the future when I'm gardening in ground and when I can own and control my land. So I hope this episode helps. I hope you leave inspired. I hope you're taking one actionable step towards a more regenerative garden today, and that act helps you keep growing joy. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. It means so much to me that I get to be part of your planty journey. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. We have so many incredible interviews and solo episodes on incredible houseplant and gardening topics that you will not want to miss this year. And while you're over there in the podcast player subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section of Growing Joy with Plants and leave us a review? Reviews are tremendously helpful for the growth of the podcast, so thanks in advance. If you're looking for more opportunities to grow as a plant parent with Growing Joy content, we've got so many options for you. First, I highly recommend you taking the Plant Parent Personality Test. It's free. It's super fun. It takes 3 minutes to complete. At the end of the test, you're going to get your plant parent personality profile and a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you and your lifestyle, inspired by your results. The links are in the show notes. If you're looking to uplevel your plant parent game, I have so many free downloads on my website that I think could help you, like the Understanding Natural Light download or 9 different ways to green up your office space. If you'd like to support the show monetarily and help me bring the show to as many people as possible for free, you can head to our Patreon link in the show notes to learn more about our offerings. And finally, I invite you to come hang out with me and continue the planty conversation on social media, on Instagram and TikTok. I'm Growing Joy with Maria. My DMs are always open if you have requests for topics or ideas for the show. Thank you again for listening. It is truly my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing joy. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will
will pop up. So you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.